So what we usually just do now is throw it open for a satsang for you guys, if there's anything you want to ask or anything like that. Go for it.
Caroline's got a hand up, Helen.
Oh, I can't see. It might be a good idea to raise your hand on Zoom. Sorry, Caroline. I can't see everyone. Thanks, Maggie.
I'm new. I've got a bit of a burning question, Helen. I was going to ask it on Satsang on Thursday, but as it played out, it just took a back burner early. But it keeps coming up to ask you this. I just wondered if you could say a little bit about the importance of gratitude, being humble, and coming from a place of humility. I don't really know why. I just would like you to say, they just keep coming up and coming up, because that's where I'm from now. It just so much, I'm just saying, go to sleep saying thank you, thank you, thank you, all night long.
It's kind of hard not to, isn't it, when you see what you've been given, you know, when you see
so humble, yeah, and the humility of such a massive scene the day before yesterday, and it continued the day before yesterday, just the enormous, the power. It just keeps coming to ask. I just wondered what you might have to say about it. Just, it's so prominent at the moment.
It's there's two places where we get stuck in arrogance, where we feel we know with certainty, and the first one is where we feel we're a separate being and we're so sure that we're not good enough and not ready and all that stuff, even though a teacher might be saying you really are ready and worthy and all that stuff. And then the temptation afterwards, for me at least, was with every powerful seeing, like you were just talking about, there was always this, that's it now, I've seen it all, you know, the kind of this feeling that comes, like, because when you have a hard moment like that, it's a huge shift, they're bigger each time, and they feel complete, don't they? They feel like an end, they feel like that they can't possibly get any better than this. And that's the other place we tend to get stuck, you know, where I'm not saying you are at all, but I'm guessing that's why you're asking, but maybe not, but meaning, I'll take my foot out of my mouth in a minute. It's easy to grab a hold of this feeling that we've seen it, you know, we've really seen it deeply, but it's just always staying open, because no matter how far you've come, if you grab a hold of I know again, you'll immediately suffer, you know. Having said that, it comes with its own inbuilt safeguard. If you really feel that you know something, the more awakened you get, the more it hurts instantaneously. Like your body will just immediately scream at you that you're believing something again, you know.
Yeah, I get that. No, I'm past that now. I'm just open to anything that, you know, it just gets bigger and bigger. I just don't know. I'm beyond saying it's finished now. I'm beyond all. I realise that it's so powerful, that it's a continuum. And for you, the gratitude I have for you is in showing where not a lot of teachers do, is that there's no end point, and to just remain open, and it is a continuum. And I love it when you share about anything that you still have to work with. It just shows us an allowance and a love for anything that comes. I can't go on about the gratitude because I'll start crying.
You and me both, right?
I just live from this place of just pure joy and gratitude. And
I think the humility comes as part of that anyway, doesn't it? It's very hard to be arrogant when you're having these gifts given to you all the time, every day, more and more seeings and epiphanies, and it's hard to... Although I've seen some people manage it, just kind of, you know, close up and you never see them again. And, you know, and it's like, well, there goes another one. But
No, it can't, be like that, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets to the point where your body won't let you anywhere, you know, like we're saying, but humility is just, it's just knowing the difference between that and, you know, this kind of false pride of ego. But, you know, it's not an issue now for you. And just to recognize, you know, for me, it's that there's always going to be more, isn't there? Like you said, there's always going to be deeper. There's always going to be clearer. There's always going to be, it's never finished in the manifestation, at least. There's a point where you've seen it enough that you never forget it anymore, but it's always going to be refined in itself. And so if you're enjoying that process, then you're not really going to want to stop it anyway. You're not going to grab a hold of anything.
No, it's just, I mean, I was in the woods the other day and I actually couldn't stand up. It just came in waves and waves and waves and waves. And then came a notion to demand something, like the power, it's so powerful. I felt like I could demand something and I thought I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, you have to watch that as it goes on, because the slightest little wish or whim and it shows up.
Well, it did, Helen, because... there was so many people around these woods and this power, and I was hanging onto a tree and I was bent over and it was just waves and waves of joy and bliss and peace. And there were so many people and I wanted peace, just to move the people. And when I went to walk down towards this little path with a bridge and a river that had previously been occupied by about 20 people and all the dogs and the cats and the kids. And I walked down and it was complete silence. I never saw another person. I stood in the river, never saw another person. Well, I walked back up to the car and I turned around and they all come like a flock around the market. And I was laughing at the car. I thought, I'm that powerful. I just made that happen.
It becomes clearer, doesn't it? You know, just how powerful it is.
Yeah.
It's where the meaning Genesis, when they say your word is God, you know, the word was God. Like anything that arises out of you is going to happen instantaneously when there's no time. And that's just becomes more and more obvious that it, you know. I saw something this morning, some, you know, I can't get what I want playing somewhere, and it was fun. It was just, oh, look at that, there's it's still going there, you know. And it's a joyful process then, isn't it?
Yeah, you've changed my life, Helen.
Oh, good, for the better, hopefully.
I can't tell you, no suffering, there's just joy and bliss and waves of peace. And
that's another thing I was going to say, the your body will get better at handling it. It won't knock it out so much, you know.
Yeah, I hope so, because the uploads have been a bit, you know, my body does, it seems to be, I don't know if it's a limitation or it's just the uploads, but it's just bouncing up and down. It's just easing off now. I had like an internal shake that I had for about 3 weeks.
Just be careful not to believe in time. It takes time for my body to get used. If the body is the noumenon anyway, right?
Yeah.
I caught tripped myself up with that, or I can see it right now, but it takes time to embody it, or it takes time to get used to it, the energy. And, you know, the further you've gone into the process, the more even a slight thought like that will manifest immediately, you know. And it's quite painful when that happens, you know, sometimes physically, because there isn't any time, and more and more you're living from that place, but you're believing in a process of the embodiment process. You know, and you're suddenly back into time and space and being a separate being then without realizing. So whatever amount of energy the body has to assimilate, it can do so quite easily without any beliefs in the way. You know, when there's suddenly a new surge of energy or something.
Yeah. Okay, I'll contemplate that. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Ian and Maggie, Ian, whichever.
It's me. It was just a share from what Caroline said, really. Two things. One on a jokey note is that we're blaming Helen for the snow that we've had this year, because she uttered the words, we haven't had much snow. in England for many years, and we've had the worst snow in England for many years. And she said those words, and Claire is on the verge of censoring her at the moment.
I did do a snow angel, but I couldn't take a photograph of it because it was only me. So I did in the middle of our road here about 2 weeks ago. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of snow. So anyway, but it was more about... It was more about what you said, Caroline, about you love it when Helen shares where she struggled with something. Totally, totally agree with that. I've spent, since I've known Helen, spent my time watching her awaken and watching her go through her probably darkest times, to be honest. And not that I'd wish that, but...
The outcome of it, the
fact that you can get through anything that has helped me get through my darkest times, and know that there's that peace that I'm now living in, not at the end of it, you are it, but it feels like a journey, doesn't it? But it's been a huge thing. And even now, listening, she's just said, oh, I was looking at something this morning. It's just a tremendous way to teach challenge, tremendous.
It just becomes fun. Yeah, this belief playing out, and it's fun, you know, rather than it's just fun to see, because you know something better is going to manifest the moment you see it.
Yeah, that's yeah. Just what I'm seeing at the moment. I'm finally not criticizing myself. I've put it in my GP homework, but I messed up big time this week. On paper, I really messed up big time and end up having to bring someone. It was the publishers, and I said they'd made all these errors, and I rang them and they hadn't. I was looking at the wrong document, and I just had to say, I realised while I was talking to this woman in America, who I've always been a little bit scared of, I've got to say, and I just recognised it, and I went, I'm putting my hands up here, it's my mistake, I'm really sorry. And she just burst out laughing. She went, oh, that's such a relief, we don't have to do all this work. And we ended up having such a good conversation. And in the past, I would have cried, what an idiot. I had a moment of, oh, I need to be more careful, and that was it. And it's amazing. It's
always the only difference is how we handle the patterns when they come up. You can be free right now if you get that. Like if you look, want to see it when it comes up, you won't be suffering. No matter if it's playing or not, you won't be suffering, right?
Yeah, and that's what happened. Because I asked to speak to Helen because I needed to let her know what had happened with the publisher. And I just said, guess what I've done? Normally it would have been, you've had a message from me late at night. I was sat in my bed sobbing, wasn't I, a few years ago? And sobbing because I'd messed up. And obviously Helen didn't see it like that, but it was a few years ago, but it was such a turnaround. So thank you, Helen. Thanks.
Anyone else want to ask anything or share anything? Sergio, excuse me.
Well, I put it on the for the homework. This has to do with unconditional love. When the question that comes up for me is, who is the one that resists? Is it the ego, or who's the one that is not inclusive of it? Because the self is unconditional love, and the ego is dividing. And on the lesson you mentioned that it's not the karmic pattern, but the very fact that I'm rejecting something, that that's why it keeps playing.
Yeah.
So who rejects? Is it the ego?
Yeah. Just give me 1 second, hang on. I'm just going to pause this.
Yes.
My internet connection is unstable, not me, my connection. So there we go. Okay. Can you all hear me okay still, yeah?
Yes.
Good. There we go. So if you think of it as self and ego are actually separate, you know, they're two, they're one thing appearing two ways. Yeah. So it's more like a dimmer switch on the light. If I turn the light up full here, this light, it'll be really bright. If I turn it down, then it's going to appear darker and darker. And there's always the capacity for unconditional love. But what we call ego is really just a bunch of conditional ways to love ourselves or others or the world or, you know, that kind of thing. So we could say it's ego that's doing it, but ego is the self. It's not different to, it's just limited in its expression of love. It's not capable, because it works in duality, it compares one thing to another. It's not capable of, if you had two things to compare and you were looking at which one's better, then so one of them has to lose, doesn't it? One of them has to be worse. One of them has to be good and the other one has to be bad, and one has to be wanted or not wanted. And that's the only way ego can function. So it compares how you are now to how you want to be in the future, or it'll be comparing how you are now to some other students on the Sangha, or it's always comparing and evaluating. Because of that, it's incapable of appreciating or loving what is right now, seeing something as it really, really is. So it's like if you stand and look at a piece of art and just appreciate how beautiful it is, or a sculpture or something, you can do that. But ego couldn't do that. You'd always be comparing it to the piece of art next to it. It couldn't just admire it because of the way it works, you know. So you could say ego is the one that loves unconditionally, but loves conditionally rather. But it's not a fault of it. It really is just incapable of doing it any other way. I don't know if that helps to.
Okay. Yeah, it does. But then, in order to love the ego unconditionally or embrace it, how would one do so?
Yeah. That's a very good question. If you make a start like we've just done now, understanding why ego is limited and wanting to understand why it works the way it does, wanting to recognize its limits. And, you know, all of us spend, if you look at pretty much every question that comes into satsang, it's how can I stop my ego doing this? Or saying this or something similar, isn't it? How can I love myself more? But also always with the idea that I've got to stop the self-hate. I've got to change ego's mind, make it more unconditionally loving. If you really have a deep understanding and want to see why ego functions the way it does, then that is a form of love, isn't it? If you fell in love with someone, you would want to know everything you could about them, what they like to do and all of that, and where they like to go, what their favorite food is, all of that. But all of us are pushing against ego because we think it should be able to function differently. But ego is just like software on this computer. It can't be any different than it is. And it can't function in a different way. So to want to understand its limitations is a form of acceptance of it, isn't it? Rather than pushing it away. And once you really come to see that it's not capable of doing what we're trying to get it to do, you finally kind of leave it alone energetically. And its opinions and its belief systems and all of that become less and less relevant. Not wrong, but just less and less relevant, because you start waiting for it to change its mind. Because it's not gonna, it can't. And everyone is trying to change it into you know, the pure expression of the neuron, and it's just not going to happen. It's like asking, like, this laptop is on Windows 10. It's like asking the Windows 10 software to have a conscious conversation with me, the one operating it. It's not possible, is it? So as you really sort of come to understand how it sees things and why it runs on assumptions, it's made of beliefs, it's a bunch of beliefs, and it has no capacity to ask if that belief is not true. It assumes it is. It also assumes how it sees the world, i.e. you're not good enough and you can't get what you want and you're not safe and all that stuff. It believes that that is true. It's got no capacity to see. It's like a spider caught in its own web. It has these beliefs, and therefore it keeps seeing the reflection of those beliefs, therefore keeps believing in the beliefs again and again, and around it goes. And you can see that cycle, that causality cycle, but it can't, ego. It holds onto the beliefs with such tenacity because it says, see, look, the experience is happening to me. So as you come to really get this deeper and deeper, and you look at it again and again, you stop trying to make ego change, and that's when it dissolves.
Okay.
First of all, we're identifying with ego because we think it's true. We think we are that separate being. Then we see that we're not. But then we set about pushing against ego, making it wrong, making it bad. When really it's just that we're pushing against it. It will fall away on its own as we put attention on what's real. I don't have to wait for the self-hating thoughts to stop before I look for self-love. The self has the capacity to embrace both perspectives at once. Okay. It's fundamental, that, isn't it, what we're talking about? It's something I'm extraordinarily passionate about because I wasted so much time, as we all do, of course, trying to get my ego to wake up, and it never worked.
Very well. Thank you, Ellen.
No problem. Anyone else like to ask anything? Laurie?
Hi. I don't have a question, Helen. I just wanted to express my gratitude to you and also to everybody here today and the folks that come on the Sanghas, because there's so much love and understanding and compassion and power that comes in the Sanghas. And I know you're not there.
I do hear about it, though. I do get, yeah.
But there's... And whether it's the particular person or it's just the vibe of the group altogether, I can't really articulate what it is, but it's so powerful that you can put your finger on it almost. It's like a pulse. Mm-hmm. And I have nothing to say other than I'm just so grateful for finding my way to this group of people. And I just want to say thank you.
That's lovely to hear. And thank you also for what you contribute. And just want to say that's what I always wanted, was a group of unconditionally loving beings that would support each other like that. We all unconditionally love each other. It's ourselves that we conditionally love, isn't it, that we blame. And there's something amazing that happens to someone new coming into the Sangha when they, whether they join a course or whatever, but when they come into this group of beings that are already very loving, it has a very transformative effect on what they believe is possible for them to get out of the teaching. So it works together so well. And it's just exactly what I wanted. It's a loving family that's developing. It's beautiful. It really is.
It's unbelievable.
And it just grows, and it's, you know, somebody coming into the next DTE course will wake up so much quicker because the energy field that we're generating, all of us together, is so high now, and it's getting higher every day. collectively, you know, that that's going to counteract their own self-doubts and all of that unworthiness. You know, it's they still have to do the work, but the work will be easier for each group of beings coming in, you know. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Was that you, Ian? Wait, did you have some?
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I kind of have a question, I think. I've been reading your book again about how to learn to love yourself. And about accepting everything in that moment. It's quite a strong theme running through the book.
Like 50,000 times.
Yeah, it's quite a few times, yeah. And I was wondering, well, it made me realise that I could still handle like negative emotions and negative feelings a wee bit better, shall I put it that way.
We'll draw a finish line there, right? We're always able to embrace them deeper every time when they come up. That's the only thing you need to guarantee, isn't it? Am I embracing this more this time?
Yeah.
Than last time.
I've still got an inbuilt mechanism that kicks in, which just wants to get through to the other side while it's going on, if you know what I mean.
That's exactly what I was talking about, not trying to make ego into the self.
Yeah.
It's always just going to want to avoid the emotion when it comes up.
Mm.
It's always. And there's no way it can react any differently.
Yeah.
See, the first thing that happens when some emotion comes up is going to be this, oh, God, not you again. Or, you know, this internal sigh that's just like, not you again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you remember, but wait, I can be with this a bit more, you know. And that's unconditional love of ego right there, isn't it? I'm going to allow it to have its, oh, not you again, you know. Not that the self is like, oh my God, it's so fun to be scared, but or feel unworthy, but it's not telling ego what to do, is it, in that way?
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been really trying to allow everything as much as I can. But another question came up, just I was wondering what was your views on like it is still more difficult for, even though I'm not a man, ultimately, is it still more difficult for men to handle emotions than women?
If you believe it, yes.
Yeah.
And all of us subscribe to the collective consciousness where there are beliefs like that. You know, there's all these beliefs, isn't there, where, you know, as the body grows old, it's got to become more dysfunctional. Men don't express their emotions as well as women do. Mm. All these stereotypical beliefs that are sort of deep in the human psyche, like awakening is hard and rare.
Mm.
We all really deep down believe that, even though it's completely turning the opposite now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so there's all these deep-seated, you know, if you're overweight, you're obviously going to end up with diabetes or hypertension, or, you know, there's just the natural, you know, these kind of things that are instilled in us by other, you know, media and stuff like that, but also stuff we've heard from parents, and just in the collective consciousness, full stop, you know, that just, and physically, yes, there are things that men are better at than women, you know, and I'm not going to get into all of that, but it's only a stereotype, it's only a belief, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A set of beliefs in that way. So if you choose to override that, then it's going to not affect you.
I'm just really surprised the more gone, like, this journey, so to speak, that there isn't more women teachers than men teachers.
Yeah, that was kind of, that was very surprising to me that, you know, I remember loads of times when you were the only guy in satsang.
Mm.
And yet how many female teachers are there? Mm. Not that you were the only person in satsang, but you were the only male in the room.
Mm.
You know, and then there doesn't seem to be very many female teachers for whatever reason. I don't know. Can't really say why, but maybe that's, having said that, I don't really keep up with any of the who's who out there teaching these days. So I probably wouldn't be the best source, but if you look at stereotypically, I mean, back in the times when the Vedas were written and all of that, it was even believed that women couldn't reach enlightenment. You just had to wait till next lifetime. Sorry.
Yeah.
Just tough, you know, wrong incarnation.
Yeah, yeah. I know it's a very generalization, but it's like in most of my life that before I was even like on this journey at all, and I was just totally, it always appears generally that women have got a heads up start on how to handle emotions much more than men have.
So that's why I was surprised. I was swamped by them and overwhelmed by them and didn't know what to do with them, and handled it with alcohol most times. Numb the pain, really. But that belief is there in the human psyche, isn't it? It's repeated very often, you know, to us, at least from my upbringing. I remember my dad never could really express his emotions unless he was absolutely overwhelmed, like when someone passed away, or twice I remember him crying. One was to Adagio for strings. He was just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And I remember being amazed that this man was showing emotion. He had strong beliefs that men can't express themselves in that way and shouldn't also. That's the other one, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I never saw my dad cry until he was probably in his late 70s, 80s. He never cried when I was a kid.
I think this generation, we're here to revolutionize seeking and teaching and all of it, right? I think with the greatest respect to how it's being done, and I've said this before, but the teaching and the seeking, if anything else we were doing in the human endeavor was producing the same, let's say we run a French class and only 0.001% of students in the class learned to speak fluent French, we'd say, look, this needs an overhaul, right? Something's quite wrong here.
Yeah.
But a lot of the teaching and the way that students come to the class as well as being all tradition and being too scared of the teacher and not asking the challenging questions and stuff like that. How do we get onto this subject?
No idea. Bit of a tangent.
You got me on a rant now. So yeah. All of it needs to change, doesn't it, really? You know
what, the whole lot.
Let's just change the world. Does that answer your question?
I have that question, sorry to jump in, I have that question, Ian, that you just asked to Ellen, so that's why we came to the subject.
Thanks
Helen. Thank you.
Lovely. Helen, when you're ready.
Thanks, sorry, I couldn't unmute. Yeah, it's I've noticed it for a while, but now I'm really noticing that if I look into the space in the room, or I sort of drop back, or whatever it is that it is that sort of I seem to naturally do sometimes, of letting go of thought. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but I hope you do. Like, I'm accessing.
Sometimes you just accidentally stop focusing so intently on the phenomenon, right? It just happens accidentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's intentional. What occurs is like this feeling, and it's getting stronger, so I must be exacerbating it somehow, of falling. It's like a dizziness. It's like a, yeah, you know, sometimes like before you go to bed, you get that feeling of falling. Yeah. It's like that. And it's quite disorienting, and it sort of makes me stop wanting to do whatever that is. I'm not even sure I need to do whatever it is I'm doing. But I just wondered if anyone else has had that, or if, did you have that, or if you have any thoughts of how to just ignore it.
let me just explain this and see if it's what you're talking about, because there was a time when I was really working with the where am I question, and I realized I had no location, and I realized, well, it got clearer and clearer. But everything that I was doing, my body was doing, was from this standpoint. I'm standing up, I'm sitting down, I'm laying down. And I realized that none of that was real. Like, I'm not doing any of those things. And there was a time when I felt like, it happened on and off for about 6 months. I couldn't tell. I woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, for example. And I thought I was still lying down and I was sitting up on the bed. And then I would get up to try to walk into the bathroom and I had to hold onto the wall because I felt like I was falling sideways. Just, you know, like my internal balance thing or something had gone, you know. And it made it really difficult to function for a little while. Is that kind of similar?
Maybe. I wouldn't say it's sort of there all the time and it's
every now and again
having trouble functioning. Is if I intentionally just pull back from focusing on something into like a much larger awareness, or if I were to ask the question like, where am I really? I can feel it now. It's just like this, like I might fall over at any moment, even though I'm just sat here.
Yeah, because you've lost your reference point, haven't you? Even if I'm looking at an object or a thought or something, I have a reference point. There's a relative location for me then, you know, of I'm here and that thing is over there. And we've been functioning from that idea our whole lives that this is where I am here. And when that begins to fall away, it can be very disorientating because there's literally no reference point in awareness, is there? In, you know, if I'm aware of something and I've separated myself from it and I'm here and it's there. But if I'm just aware and all the reference points have gone completely, and that can, you know, it leaves you with no, you don't know where you are, you don't know what you are, you don't know anything like that, do you, in those moments? The thing to do would be to sort of remind yourself that you're only seeing how you've always been. There's always been this core assumption that we all have that I'm here looking through this body. I'm around this body or in this body or something like that, you know? And just reminding yourself of you're only seeing your literally there's no location for you, is there, very literally. And that's how it's always been. It helps to remind yourself that there's no reason the body should experience, although I did because I didn't realize this at the time, but there's no reason the body should experience any interruption or weirdness by seeing what has always been, because the body's been functioning perfectly without your help, you know, in that way.
That's really helpful. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Is that suddenly it has all reference points gone suddenly, or are you just seeing that they were never there? There's a huge difference in how it impacts you.
Yeah, I think there's this sort of feeling of like, God, I have to get grounded, and yeah. Kind of, but actually it's not true.
If you can just kind of let go into it when it happens, it's usually just some little ego thing saying, stop here, don't go any further, you know, just think this is dangerous type of thing, you know, you're going to lose something important or all of that. But everything we've ever experienced has been from this assumption that I'm here in this one place in time and space and everything else is elsewhere, to, you know, other than me. And you just, in and as the noumenon, that doesn't, it's just not relevant, is it? There isn't anything to have a reference point from. Like, all reference points on the map have gone and there's just the map left, but there's nothing written on it anymore, you know. Lovely.
Thank you.
Good. Anyone else want to ask anything or share? Okay. Lovely. I'll take it. So no then. Okay. So do we... Oh, Sergio, yeah.
What about Blissfest? Any news, or should we look into like perhaps rent a big house, Airbnb? Any comments from?
I think the original idea was to get a big see if we can rent a big house or something like that, you know, to fit everyone in, but. We haven't really gone to with any specifics. So if anybody has any ideas about that, then we're definitely open to it. It'd be easier because there wouldn't be space. Well, we've had 20 people in this room here, haven't we, in the past, but it was interesting. We certainly wouldn't want to do it for a long amount of time, especially because I only have one bathroom. So, yeah.
Okay.
How many people were in the room here, Caroline, when you were here for that course? Do you remember?
How many people? There seemed to be a lot when I first walked in, but I think maybe about 18 or 19.
That's about right.
Helen, I'm just going to sell my house and buy an ashram.
Say that again.
I'm just going to sell my house and buy an ashram.
Okay, that works. Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah.
We can all just go, can't we?
I saw one the other day, didn't I, Helen? I saw one the other day, 895,000.
Oh. So when you've done that, Caroline, let us know the address and we'll all just bring a sleeping bag and a pillow.
I just sold my house. Honest, I'm capable of anything at the moment.
Yeah, it would. I don't think my teenage daughter would be all that impressed living in an ashram, but, you know.
No, well, she could have a little flat, couldn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, she'd love that.
So, yeah, I don't think we have any concrete plans with it yet, but I do know it's 209 days today.
Wow, yes.
Not that anyone's counting. Claire's got a thing on her phone. She's actually counting down on her phone.
Oh, good.
Do we have numbers yet? How many people are coming?
Yeah, who can come?
We're using a highly scientific wing it and see what happens approach. So
winging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case anybody has no idea what we're talking about, everyone is invited here. Well, not right here. Well, maybe right here.
Yes, too. We are. Right here. Yeah.
Right there.
Right there.
Everyone's
no, here.
Invited to Ian and Maggie's house in September, you know. So but there's a gathering we're going to have just for the team meeting, just for you guys that are doing so much valuable work. Love to spend time with you all and just get to know you better. And
I can't wait. I really can't wait.
Got so a couple little trips planned, little excursions and stuff. So hopefully the weather will be decent, although you never know in England.
Shush.
Yeah, don't wish for snow, whatever.
I don't think it'd be snowing in September, Ian.
I wouldn't put it past you.
You're blaming me for the snow. Caroline, did you want to say something sensible?
Yeah, I would just like...
I'm moving on past the end now.
I would just like to say just quickly that the last anger we've just had today was just about everybody talking about their appreciation for you, Helen. There's so much...
You're determined to make me cry today, aren't you?
No, but it was like that. Every single person on the Sangha was talking about how the expression of unconditional love that you show us, you lead by example. And within the talking about it, everybody was very loved up. It was a great session. So there's so much appreciation. There's so much from everybody. I just wanted to say that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And it's easy to love everyone unconditionally when you figured out how to do it with yourself. You know, that's the tough one, isn't it? So, thank you.
Sorry, having a teacher that leads by example is just wonderful.
It's got to be that way, otherwise the teacher's words don't have any authority.
I'm not sure about all the teacher. Anyway, I'm sure, Karen.
Well, that's a whole different conversation. You know, if I was sat here going, I think you could probably do it this way. It's not going to have the same power, is it, or anything? So.
And be quiet now, because I've talked a lot on my first meeting.
You're only allowed 60 words. That's your maximum per meeting. You've exceeded now, hasn't
it? I failed then, haven't I?
We all did. Yeah. All right. So we leave it there, then I'll stop this recording.